Welcome to Conexión Circular, where we aim to raise awareness of sustainability and circular economy topics. Stay tuned with us so we can learn together more about how we can adopt sustainable behavior. I am Viridiana Bello-Wickle, and today we will discuss about energy performance contracting, benefits, and opportunities. Our guest is Rio Abraham from India, and he is a project development manager of ADES. He's a seasoned sustainability professional focused on the regenerative economy, and he's passionate about driving change towards a more sustainable and regenerative future. So thank you so much for joining us today for this project. Welcome, Rio.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Viridiana, for the warm welcome. I'm really thrilled to be part of this podcast. I must say that you're doing very interesting work to raise awareness on the topics of sustainability and also circular economy in general. It's quite something to be appreciated about. And also, I mean, I just want to take this opportunity to try my best to explore and provide some insight into what energy performance contracting is. So yeah, I hope it could be an insightful session.
Yes, thank you so much. So Rio, can you tell us more about yourself and what motivates you to work in sustainability?
Sure. My background is in engineering. And, personally, I've always been fascinated about, technology, the environment, and general social well-being. But I have to be honest, I wanted to, during my early days of my career, I wanted to get into sustainability consulting because it was trendy, it was cool. It was quickly becoming popular at that time. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be part of this niche field, which was really growing. And I was blessed to get an opportunity to enter the field. However, as I got more and more exposed to, the field, started getting involved more into projects, I understood the different environmental challenges that the planet faces, people face, in terms of climate change, resource depletion, pollution, and that really opened my eyes to see beyond the trend or the fact that it is something that was very popular, and I started to really get motivated to really contributing and finding solutions that bring positive impact in the world. In particular, what drives me in the field of sustainability is the fact that I'm able to have some level of responsibility to contribute to the future generations. So I think that's something that has been a key point in the place where I'm with this field. Also being mindful of my personal impacts that comes towards the planet as well as people. So yeah, I think it's a really fulfilling career to be part of, not just as a career but also personally. In terms of the values that I believe in, I think, yeah, sustainability is something that really is for everybody to be a part of and really experience.
Yes, thank you for your insight. I think when you enjoy your job and you have a positive impact, that helps you to have this fulfillment, because it's not just to have a profit, it's also to have a good impact in society and also in the environment. So we have heard about the Paris Agreement a lot these days, more today because we are facing the 1.5 Celsius degree challenge. And one of the main goals to commit is to keeping global warming below these 2 Celsius degrees, no? With the guidance of the Sustainable Development Goals. So tell us about which one is your favorite and why.
Yeah, so thank you for bringing up the Paris Agreement. I think, it's one of the pivotal, conferences or agreements that has actually placed, really things to move forward, specifically with related to sustainable development. I think it's a little difficult to, put one goal specifically as a favorite goal, or maybe to put forward one that is, what I prefer the best. That being said, I feel looking at the fact that every goal has a relation to each other, and in a way it's a very integrated ecosystem of goals that work to bring a positive impact on a holistic level, right? So if I were to pick one, I think I would go for goal number 7, which is to bring affordable and clean energy. And I'll tell you why, what my reasons are. So I think, firstly, the fact that it's able to bring in access to affordable, reliable, sustainable power to all, I mean, that itself speaks a lot. So that goal basically does multiple things. One is it aligns with the goal of climate action. So obviously the fact of bringing in affordable and clean energy helps to really mitigate climate change. So that's one thing. Transitioning from fossil fuels to renewable energy sources, I think it's essential to driving reduction of greenhouse gases. And second point is it also relates or aligns with the goal of sustainable development. So, I mean, energy is a critical enabler of sustainable development. So wherever you need to have some level of development, you need to have energy, and what better than have a clean power to drive that. Again, access to energy, you know, in different areas. So what that would be looking at would be to bring energy equity and clear access to areas where it cannot be, where it currently is not, you know, full-fledged available. So again, bringing in clean energy, renewable sources of energy in those areas definitely pushes things through. Other multiple goals is, again, renewable energy transition and also technological innovation. So, you know, the fact that there's, I mean, we've been speaking a lot about maybe renewable energy sources like solar and even wind, but there's a lot of different technologies that's coming up. Specifically now, we're talking a lot about hydrogen as a fuel source. I mean, so there's a lot of R&D work that's being done, I mean, off the field and also on the field, practically, to look at making it commercially viable, as well as you know, operationally feasible. So, you know, we are living, I think, in a great time, a point of transition, and I think, yeah, I mean, you know, it basically all fits in together. Every goal relates to one another in a way, and it's again, when you look at it from a holistic perspective, I believe that you know, everything relates to each other and everything contributes to each other in a very you know, systematic and synergic way. But yeah, I would definitely go for goal number 7, as I believe it connects to multiple goals, and it really drives and enables the other goals to really really, you know, function properly.
Yes, because we need energy for everything. We need energy for transportation, for production, for cooking. So for all the basic needs energy. And with the energy growth is directly linked to well-being and prosperity across all the globe, no? So meeting the growing demand for energy in a safe and environmentally responsible manner is a key challenge. Could you explain what an EPC and what is the relationship with energy savings?
Certainly. So energy, so EPC is defined as, or let me just put it out, it's energy performance contracting. So it's a type of project model or financing mechanism that really allows you know, organizations to implement energy efficiency projects without the need for upfront capital. So that's the key word, no need for upfront capital. So typically what it looks like is the, you know, the building owner or the asset owner would partner with an energy service company. So they're like contractors who are really well-versed and experienced in executing energy retrofit or energy efficiency projects. And it looks like, you know, where the ESCO or the energy service company would come in and carry out an energy audit and identify energy saving opportunities or solutions. And then what would happen is either they would be able to finance the project. So that's where, you know, no upfront capital investment is required, or a third party would come in to finance the project. So the building owner does not have to come in to, you know, put any upfront capital in the projects, right? And these projects tackle anywhere from a simple lighting retrofit or a pumping retrofit, or it goes to having a holistic look at the building. So that means it covers everything from lighting, pumping, and, you know, the major loads like HVAC system. Also looking at things like the facade, insulation, feasibility to have renewable energy sources as well. So I mean, yeah, it's definitely you know, a key thing to look at. One of the key features of EPC is that the apart from the upfront capital being brought in by an ESCO or a third party financier, There's also the opportunity of the ESCO to guarantee the savings. So the EPC projects or the energy performance contracts are, you know, typically the savings are guaranteed. So 100% of the savings are guaranteed. So that's where the performance risk of the project also is taken away from the building owner. So, you know, that gives some level of comfort to the building owner. Additionally, EPC contracts typically, you know, include also ongoing monitoring and, you know, measurement of the energy savings. So there's a process of basically looking at and reviewing the savings and you know, having international methodologies in place to make sure that the savings are actually, you know, taking place as promised, and it's since validated. So it's either done through the ESCO itself, or in some cases third parties are also brought in to, you know, to make sure and validate that the savings take place. Sometimes the ESCO companies do also have, you know, the technology like real-time monitoring, bringing in IoT sensors, real-time metering devices, which not only brings in a level of sub-metering into the facility, so there's like a more granular view of the consumption of equipment within the facilities, but at the same time, it's a tool that's utilized to do a measurement and verification or validation of these savings. So in summary, energy performance contract, I would say, is one is a financing mechanism that enables organizations to basically drive energy efficiency projects. So, you know, if organizations want to really, you know, as part of their planning of net zero as well as decarbonization goals, I would say an EPC is a fantastic way to really drive things through. So, I mean, definitely they would want to consider this as an option in their net zero, you know, planning. EPC relationships with energy savings is, I think, it's very fundamental. So there's a lot of, you know, trust that comes to these sort of projects because, you know, the savings are guaranteed. So that really helps the building owners to, you know, build a level of trust. And more we are seeing that there are different entities like super ESCOs being set up, usually from the government side, that would, you know, also again develop trust between, you know, building owners as well as ESCO contractors and all different players in the ecosystem. Yeah, so that's a little bit about what an EPC is.
Okay, so, well, for my understanding, like, okay, I have a building, I'm the owner of the building, I have the energy consumption, no? So my goal is to reduce the energy consumption, and the energy that trying to do it now with renewable energy, because we have this goal to decarbonize our system, no? So I can do this EPC, but I need a ESCO to provide it, or how it works, or what is the role? Could you explain me more about what is the role of the ESCO, and how, as a owner of the building, or the how I can work with that?
Sure. So I'll detail the role of an ESCO. So an ESCO is basically an energy service company. And I mean, they play a very crucial role in, you know, in the EPC project. So they come from, you know, from the whole development of the project level to implementation and even guaranteeing and, you know, validating the same. So they basically can play the complete life cycle of the project, of the EPC project. So now ESCOs are specialized companies. They provide energy solutions to organizations who seek to, you know, basically improve their energy efficiency, who want to reduce energy costs and overall lower their environmental impact. You know, typically these companies are well experienced to execute specifically energy efficiency projects, energy engineering projects. They also have strong project management teams, because these are like mini construction projects that happen within brownfield projects or existing buildings. Most ESCOs also have the capability or the ability to provide financing, and they also bring in expertise to, you know, identify, design, and implement energy saving solutions. So if I can just go through maybe just a quick step-by-step of the normal process that an ESCO takes. So step one usually is part of the project development phases to do an energy audit or an assessment, where the ESCO goes into the building, you know, would carry out a basic assessment of building facilities to understand feasibility of a project potential, and also to quantify a high level of energy savings. If they feel that there is a potential for a project, again, if the client starts to show more interest and sees that there is common interest to move forward, definitely the next step would be to develop the project, and that's where they would engage on a detailed energy audit or an investment grade audit. And why this is done is so that all the measures or solutions can be clearly outlined, and this is also a time where they're able to do a lot more of measurement and logging of data. So how exactly is the building being utilized? What are the different energy consuming assets? What are the energy parameters that are in play influencing the operation of these assets? And they use instruments on the electrical side and different parameters to basically measure and also get data over a period of time. This helps them to develop a model, to validate potential solutions that they would like to apply onto the building. And basically have a solid model to implement a project. If the ESCOs have the capability to finance, they also provide that as part of the overall package. And then what you get is an energy performance contract. Again, they have a strong project management team because it's required during the implementation phase. Again, projects could take anywhere between, depending on the size and the length of the projects, it could basically go anywhere between 6 to 12 months. And finally, once the project is done, there is during the period where we call it the reporting period or the performance period, is where the savings are generated. And it's also during this phase that the savings are validated, so measured and validated. International methodologies are used to really validate these savings, and it's a long-term partnership. What we usually see is that these contracts can go anywhere between 5 to 8, 10 years, depending on different things like the tariff rate, the type of retrofit. It could be a deep retrofit where a lot of different assets are replaced, very heavily capital intensive assets are replaced, so it could go all the way to 10 years. It's a win-win situation for the building owner as well as the contractor. It's a really wonderful model to show synergy and partnership and collaboration to really drive positive impact.
So, for example, following the example, so we have the developer that wants to reduce the energy consumption. They do the audit and everything. And then what is your role in this? You recommend the best ESCO to give this EPC, or you supervise the EPC, or how it works for you?
Okay, I think you're referring to the role of a super ESCO, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so from a super ESCO's perspective, typically, the reason why super ESCOs are created or were created is basically to bring in trust between the building owners as well as the contractors, the ESCOs themselves, and also to essentially drive energy efficiency through the market. So there is an ecosystem that gets built because you have the building owners, you could have maybe third party financier companies, you have the ESCOs, you have the different OEMs and suppliers who want to basically have their solutions on these projects. The super ESCOs were created to drive that, to create trust and to ease things through for these projects to really take place. Super ESCOs also come in to bring in financing and also project development capability, so to look at actually not just design, being part of the review of the design of the project, mm-hmm. but also takes through project management as well on a higher level to review what's being done by the ESCO throughout the different phases of the implementation, and also looks to play a role of a third party measurement and verification to validate the savings that the ESCOs bring in. So, I think the key word here is trust, and the super ESCOs are also able to take the risk of the finance also on themselves, as in they invest into these projects and really are able to, you know, drive energy efficiency through the whole ecosystem.
Okay, so what are the key benefits for the private sector that choose to have an EPC? Why I have to choose an EPC?
Yeah, so I think there are quite a bit of benefits that come to anyone really wanting to pursue this in the private sector. So number one, obviously, would be the fact that it brings in cost savings. You know, as one of the primary benefits is that they are able to really bring down their energy consumption, energy bills through these projects. So that's something that they can really utilize. This whole model really supports the drive of energy efficiency and reducing consumption. One of the things that we see is that it really affects and improves their cash flow. So because of the savings that come in from the project, I mean, they're able to essentially do multiple things. One is obviously on the OPEX side, reduce that because of the savings that come from the project. And they're also able to work on, effectively utilizing and also planning for future forecasting of the CapEx as well, because these projects are heavily intensive in terms of deploying the heavy assets, which require a lot of CapEx. So they're able to essentially plan that properly. And two other points I would like to highlight is the fact that, through these projects, you have a massive improvement in the operational efficiency. So the way the building is run, the assets are run, one of the things that the ESCOs do or need to bring in is performance of these assets to be really utilized as per the requirements on site. So that means that they take care of, on the overview of how the asset is run and also the maintenance side of keeping the assets in top shape, so that they basically provide the best efficiency. And also, I think one key thing is the environmental impact that it brings in. So reduction of carbon onto the environment is a result of these projects. So I think a lot of things that the private sectors can leverage from these sort of projects. And I think one key thing, maybe I could close on this specific point, is that it's a really good risk mitigation tool to really drive energy efficiency, because somebody else is taking the risk on their behalf, whether it be financial or the actual performance of the project. So that's something that they are able to really get access to through these projects.
Okay. Yes, because it's not just replacing the light bulbs. It's more than that. No, if you need to do this review about how are you doing with the ACs or with the energy consumption, if you had elevators or any of your pumps. So it's more about these energy assets that are consuming, no? It's not just we're going to change the LED lights and that is the energy savings, no? And for example, could you explain more about how many phases are in this EPC? Because you had mentioned that first we need to know, no? We need to measure to understand where we can do the savings, no?
That's right. So, there are quite a few phases that's involved in the EPC. So, I mean, first step, obviously, we'll look at having an initial assessment that's done. So it's a very high-level exercise to understand what are we looking at, what are the opportunities within a specific building or a portfolio of buildings. So a high-level assessment could be maybe a desktop study, could be an initial meeting with the client to understand more about the building operations, the assets, and then also review of the bills, the energy bills, what are the sources of energy, what's the concentration of share of these energy sources. And then if it looks like, if it passes through a desktop study and if it's viable through a desktop study, then it eventually, rolls on to the site where an actual energy audit is done. Then once the project looks to be feasible, there's a development phase which starts to look at different things like designing the ESMs, looking at the costs in, you know, of the project, as well as to understand the operational as well as the implementation challenges that would be, you know, taking place as part of the project. Again, looking at you know, these projects have financing as well inbuilt with them, so looking at aligning with the contracts, the financing component, the commercial component as well. There's a negotiation phase with the client, really bringing in the project development side of that. And then, yeah, once everything is signed and agreed with the client, we start with the implementation phase. So that's where the project is implemented, you know, as per plan of deployment of different ECMs, energy conservation measures. And typically, I mean, it could last anywhere between 6 to 12 months or even more, depending on the scope of and the size of the projects. And the final phase is where, you know, the savings are being generated. But this needs to have a measurement and verification or a validation of these savings. So there's a measurement and verification, or MNV as we call it, to be done as part of these projects to make sure that the savings are actually being generated. And then what happens is sometimes there's also after the post-implementation, if you know, sometimes the client requests PS goes to some continue work or to provide maybe other supplementary services like monitoring. So yeah, I mean, in some cases, ESCOs also engage on that even after the project has ended. So yeah, that's just a quick overview of the whole EPC process.
No, it's good to understand the phases, because sometimes to know the process, to know what is a long term. It's not just the savings. Need, because it's not just a building. Sometimes you're a developer, it's just more than one building, or the size of the project. Or it's good to understand and how you can do this investment, the amount of capex that you need to do, and also understand what is the amount of savings that you can have in the future. No.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay. So I think the most important is that now we have the roadmap to achieve this decarbonization, no? That, and it's we have a push for the government, in this case in the UAE, to achieve this. And it's good that you have this, like you, that you are helping us to understand why we need to do that, and what is the process, and who, what is a ESCO, because of this terminology sometimes is confusing, like with who I want to need to go to solve this problem. Or it's, as you mentioned, no, it requires someone that give you trust that everything that you're gonna implement in this project, you're gonna have the savings, and also you have someone that is gonna verify that you have the savings. So that is important, because you have this trust that everything, every penny that you put in that project, you're gonna have the saving. No.
Indeed, indeed. That's a very valid point. I think trust is the key word here. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, normally we have a third party in there to build in some level of trust. Yeah, and I think as a super ESCO, that's something that, you know, typically gets achieved. But we're seeing more and more that, you know, as these sort of projects become more and more, I mean, you know, common in the market, that that yeah, building owners and different asset owners are opening up to the idea of engaging in such projects, especially with the, you know, very strong targets that set in different countries now. So I think this is definitely a good time to be in, and definitely it's a win-win situation, you know, for every player in that ecosystem.
So after you explain us all these steps for the EPC, what is the? Can you explain just a little bit one project that you have done in your work? How is what is the amount of savings that someone can expect, or so to know more about this? No.
Sure. So I think I can maybe highlight a project which we did for a university in Alain, which basically looked at the building and the portfolio building. So we had around 11 different facilities within the premise, which range from hostel facilities to the academic buildings, the labs, as well as stores, admin stations, and parking stations as well. And the type of assets that we worked on were ranging from HVAC, so package units, split units. We looked at replacements, some enhancements also done, upgrades on the package units, so refurbishing them. Looking at optimization by adding in smarter controls. Bringing in LEDs from conventional to LEDs. Looking at water efficiency through flow reducers, and also bringing in a small solar plant, which is also to bring in generate electricity, but more to bring in awareness and to drive the engagement with this different students. Now, specifically for the project, we were able to see around 26% savings on the overall bill, so which is I would say it was considerable. With the fact that obviously bringing in energy savings, electricity, water, and even chill water, but also improving the operation itself of the facilities, improvements overall in terms of indoor air quality, and the type of assets that were put in was definitely I think remarkable. The project would be ranging for around 8 years, and the clients would be gaining the savings for a period of 8 years. And definitely, I think one of the good things that come from these projects is that maintenance is taken care of, and also warranties for these assets that are being replaced is covered for the 8 years. So you would see that, the life cycle of these assets are enhanced, throughout whenever if there's any shortfall, in terms of wear and tear. So even after the project term, you see that the assets are fairly in good shape to bring in continued savings even after the term of the project. So I think in terms of carbon emissions reduced, it was around 10,000 tons. That's quite an achievement for that project.
10,000 tons per year?
Per year, yes.
Okay, yes. Yes, that is significant. And I assume, as you mentioned, in this project, it's not just like you say, you just replace the LED. It's also to measure how you provide the water, how you provide the air, because we are in the Middle East, and the Middle East, you need AC, no? But also, for example, yeah, it's cooling. But for example, you're in Europe, you also have to review for the heating, no? So all these energy consumptions is something that you have to review everything that you are, all the energy that you need to provide the well-being in the facility, no?
Indeed.
So it's good to know, it's good to understand, and also now that the word is more, retrofitting is more in your common language, no? Retrofitting, that means that you have to review, and it's not the energy saving, it's also the energy, the retrofitting, that it means that you replace the old stuff that you have with better stuff, the new stuff that is more like now we have the smart meters, no? So with the technology that we don't have 10 years ago, now we can provide, for example, the smart thermostat, and it will be easier to measure. And also, I think a key element here is how the consumer is also consuming the energy, because everybody says, no, like the energy that you are not consuming is the green energy, because you are not consuming that.
That's right. And I think that was one key point was also that there was an awareness session done with the students, right? And also the occupants of these facilities to really, utilize the systems and assets, effectively and efficiently. So it was not just on the, improvement of the performance of the assets, but also how the assets itself are utilized. So I think that's something that, looked at a holistic perspective. And like you said, it is that, there's a lot of different technologies that's coming out, and technology is now advancing very quick. So it's like I mean, you have a new iPhone every year, right? So I mean, just like that, you have like, you know, in terms of even performance and energy efficiency, I mean, you see different things happening in different types of assets. And I think also, I mean, in countries like the US and the Europe, you can see that, you know, like you have EPC contracts that basically never end, they continue. So if you have like a 10-year EPC, once the EPC is done, then they engage on another EPC because, you know, the assets that were replaced during the first phase of EPC, maybe there's a newer technology that's come out that can, you know, really engage and bring in more value to the operations of the facility. So yeah, I mean, I've actually read about that as well and heard some case studies as well.
Yes, because as you mentioned, it has to be a holistic point of view for the energy saving, because the consumer is they have a key role. So we need to understand that the energy that we consume is has to be efficient, no? So try to consume the energy wisely. So thank you, Ryu. And to close this insightful interview, we have understand a lot of things now. But how can we contribute as a consumers to tackling climate change?
I think very, very good question. So I think personally, maybe I can just share something that I've learned. Is number one is, I think, you know, everybody's learning. And the best way to learn is to really keep an open mind. So hearing from different people, you know, always improves, you know, your perspectives. You know, it opens up different ways of thinking, and you know, you end up really understanding the real needs of people and the planet overall, right? So that enables you to really grow as a person. Now, if you look at specific things that we can do, I think, you know, some of the things, I think one thing we discussed, I mean, maybe earlier, was the fact that, you know, you can have very efficient technology, but if you don't really use it well, I mean, it beats the purpose. So I think simple things like, you know, at home, you know, switching off your lights or AC when not being used, you know, even at workplaces, wherever possible, try to, you know, keep you know, a clear perspective of, you know, why we need to keep efficiency as a core mindset in whatever we do, operations, the way we use different assets, and also our, you know, habits of purchasing things. So if we can keep it to, you know, having more energy efficiency appliances, you know, looking at materials that basically can bring in an overall better sustainable footprint, that's something we can do. I think, again, more simple things like, you know, whether it be things we use, to also always look at if it can be, first of all, minimized, you know, to reduce as much waste as possible. So obviously, if you can try to minimize your, you know, purchasing of different things that eventually might lead to waste. And if it cannot be, you can also try to either reuse them or even recycle. That's potentially a way of, you know, reducing or eliminating waste. Again, having now everybody's moving into EV cars, so I mean, Tesla has made it really fancy, but there's really obviously core benefits in even choosing public transit, you know, carpooling, things like that, which are, again, simple ideas. Maybe it might be you know, initially difficult because of different mindsets, but it really all, you know, these simple small ideas actually add up and make a huge impact. And also things, I think personally in my life, I've been looking at is, you know, buying even groceries and things which are locally produced. So the benefit is that obviously you keep the, you know, the greenhouse gases associated with transportation. And also you get like really good organic food, you know, as well. So which really helps. And then, yeah, I mean, as you learn more and more things, you can start to be a personal advocate. I mean, doesn't have to be very technical. I think it's just basically understanding, you know, that our planet has finite resources. And I mean, I think we need to really cater and support the future generation. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, once we have that basic understanding, I mean, everybody's an advocate of this, of sustainability and, you know, anything that's related to that. And yeah, I mean, from that, you can really educate and inspire people. And I think I just want to leave this thought that, you know, every small action counts. The ocean starts with the few drops, and that's, you know, so every action counts, and we should start to have these practices involved in our daily lives, and eventually it'll all add up and you'll find people to collaborate with, you'll have new ideas, and that's how we can go really create a positive impact in the world.
Yes, you make something very clear, that is open mind to learn, because we don't know everything, and as you say, we can have the best technology, but if we don't open to learn how it works, we cannot have all the benefits. So one advice that, well, something that I have learned in these years is also that we don't need to put the AC, to set the AC at 18 degrees, please. Yes, because because most of the people is at 18 degrees. No, it's 22 is fine, because if not, you put a lot of load on the compressor and you are wasting energy. Every small action, as you say, is gonna have when you do small actions, you integrate in your behavior, and then you start to share these ideas with other persons. And everybody, if we do everyone a small action, we have a big change. I think we still have hope to change the way that we are using the resources. And one thing that we have to understand, that the resources are finite. We don't have to earth, and we don't have another place to go. So thank you so much for contributing and helping us to spread awareness about this topic. We have learned a lot. And remember to share and repost our content, and you find us as a Conexión Circular in YouTube, in LinkedIn, and also in Instagram. So let's do good a better way every day, and good night. Thank you, Rio.
Thank you so much, Virginia. It was a pleasure, and great to be part of this session with you. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.